Okay, so I now want to introduce to you Shelley Koppel. We've already heard from her during the last hour, but Shelley told us that she was an O&M instructor. That's orientation and mobility for the, I always think of them as the rehabilitation snobs. That's why they have to be called
Oh,
O&M.
sure.
Okay, but having now just insulted everybody, I'm going to go on to tell you that Shelley is also an excellent home economist. She takes care of everything in her home. At least I think she probably does. I don't know that. But today, we're going to visit Shelley's kitchen. And she's going to talk about things in the kitchen, and then we'll keep everybody muted for this, and she will tell us when it's time, when she wants questions. All right, Shelley, take it away.
Take it away. All right. Welcome. I'm glad to be here. And I'm a self-made home economist. I've had a lot of experience through trainings I've had, through talking to my blind friends, through the homemaking tips I learned from my mom way back in the day, and these kind of things. And I really like being in the kitchen. So with that, I've been a longtime rehabilitation teacher. I've had several jobs in my career, some with school districts and stuff, but most of them are in the lines of rehabilitation teaching. And I really like working with people that just really want to have fun. And all this stuff is pretty common sense. Might be you do something different than I do, which is totally fine. We all learn from each other. And so I'm just going to go through some things that seem to be the most common and logical, I guess. Take off my chattering so my phone will quit announcing every number that comes in and out. So the first thing I was going to talk about today is to be familiar with your kitchen. And by that, I mean, don't be afraid to rearrange things. Don't be afraid to take away some of the clutter. In my case, organization is something that I'm pretty big on. I have to have a system for the way that I'm navigating in my kitchen. So I've got cupboards that are specifically where I use everyday things like glasses, your dishware, your plates, your cups, your bowls. I've got on the shelves higher. I'm very short, so on my lower shelves is absolutely packed. But things that I don't use as frequently, I will put up on the second and third shelves in my kitchen. And those would be things like my more formal glassware, dinnerware, at least what I call formal. I don't get overly formal. I like sturdy things like stoneware. So, but it's stuff I don't use as much every day. On another cupboard coming around, I've got coffee cups, and that sits above my Keurig coffee maker. And then I come around and I've got more excess, just extras of everything. And then as I come around to the my stove, to the left of that, I've got some spices and things that I use more for baking. And then to the right of that, I've got a cupboard that I use more for spices. Some of them are baking spices. Some of them would be more your savory things for like meats and more your savory type spices. So, and then my drawers. I've got drawers kind of lined up around under the counter that would have your dish towels, your rags, your dish rags, your a drawer for kind of more like knives and kind of miscellaneous things that deal with cutting. Then you go around, I might have serving spoons and some smaller spatulas. I kind of liked a lot of your smaller handled things. That works better for me. And then to the right of the stove and underneath the microwave, I would keep stuff like your silverware, some of your baking measuring utensils, some things in that range. So I just have it kind of systematic for me. And periodically, if I think I've things are getting messy and things are getting cluttered, I'll go through and I'll just kind of straighten up or take out what I don't want. And I've inherited this kitchen. In other words, this is not where my husband and I have been married 10 years. So I inherited the house and the kitchen. So there's been some changes I've made over the years, taking some things out that I wasn't as much accustomed to using, appliances maybe, or just extra things that didn't seem to fit as much what I was doing. And so feel free to do that. And if other people are, you know, like family members and things come in and they're rearranging or they're doing something in your kitchen, the big thing I ask, put it back where you got it. That's kind of crucial, because we can't find what we want, then we're scrambling and frustrated and, you know, wanting to give up, and that's not where we want to be. So being familiar with your kitchen, using your hands, feel around. And there's occasionally things that I run across, appliances that I find out about that I've never used before. So feeling it and getting familiar with it that way is very helpful. So it's kind of the place for everything and everything in its place. Okay, markings. What do we want to mark? In my kitchen, I have very few markings, honestly, but the big appliances that you need to have marked for me would be my stove. It's a digital readout on my stove. I know Braille, so I put Braille, there's been Braille markings put on it, and it's got it's a below the counter oven. It's a flat top, for one thing. I have no problem with a flat top. I think actually it's kind of a handy tool to use. It's an extra surface for putting things and working on, but it's an oven that's got actually two ovens. So there's a more shallow oven at the top part with just one rack in it. And then the oven below, which as short as I am, it's kind of about knee length is where the handle would be. So you open that up and there's actually two racks in there. So it's a full size oven. And so that stove is marked. It's so then there's markings on the upper part of the digital readout that are for the upper oven. There's a whole set of markings underneath in the same digital panel, but on the lower part, and that's for the bottom oven. So they repeat, it's the same markings, but you can do it all the broiler and baking and timer and light and setting your, now where the number pad is for the, how many degrees to set your oven, that's all the same, but you can choose whether you want the upper oven or the lower oven. That's different. And so that really is helpful to me. My microwave is something I put numbers on. Now, if you know Braille, you know that there's like a number sign that distinguishes numbers from letters. But if you're the one using it and you know that it's numbers that you're dealing with, I don't put a number sign in front of my Braille. So I've got one, it's set up just like the phone pad. So 1 through 0, I've got those arranged. There's also some things like frozen vegetables. So I got FV for frozen vegetables. I've got RE and heat for reheat. I've got POP for popcorn. I've got PO for potato. I had to come up with a way to do that different. So there's some markings like that that I've actually put letters with and put it on the Dymo labeling tape. So it's clear so that somebody can actually still read the print through the labeling. And that's what I've even done on the stove. So
Shelley?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Shelley, it's Judy. Since a lot of people don't know Braille, I wonder if you can talk about the dots.
Yeah, that was my next way of talking about marking.
Well, okay, great minds think alike. Go ahead.
All right. So you can use the sticky dots You can again order these from the Independence Market, the National Federation of the Blind Center, nfb.org. That's and there's a phone number. I will give that out actually, because I use a lot of things from the Independent Market, and the dots are different shapes, different sizes, and different colors. So if you're able to see some colors, you can get some really bright orange little square ones that work really well. You can get some bigger dots that are, I think, a little more clear that you can stick on there. Now, sometimes the dots could come off if there's heat. One way that you need to clean your surface with maybe a rubbing alcohol or a real good Clorox wipe or something, because you do not want any grease on the surface of what you're labeling. Otherwise, the labels don't stay. The sticky doesn't stay. So dots of different kinds. There's something called Highmarks, which is kind of like an acrylic plastic that you can squeeze out of a bottle. And you actually can find this in the fabric area of a store like Walmart in your craft section. You can get these tubes. They also have those at the Independent Market. And you squeeze out a blob of it in a place that you want a dot and let it harden, and it's a tactile surface for you. There are small dots that are real small that are called locator dots that you can actually put on your phone, or if your surface that you're marking seems kind of busy with words, it would be a smaller kind of a dot to put there. I also use Braille in or dots, either one, on a washing machine or dryer. That's a really good use for some of those kinds of things. I've also gone to the degree of, we bought a new refrigerator last summer. So on the front of it, there's an ice maker, and this ice maker was digital. You've got choices, ice cubes, water, or crushed ice. And there was a little place above that you could actually make a beeping noise, but you had to know where exactly that locator place was. So I used fingernail polish. I didn't want something just real bright colored on my refrigerator necessarily, but I wanted it tactile. So I went and got some fingernail polish and asked a friend of mine to put a little blob of that on the surface of that digital readout for the ice maker. It's worked perfectly. So where you find a little blob of fingernail polish and just move your finger above it a little bit, and when you press it, it makes a beeping noise, and you can tell where you're getting your ice out of your ice maker.
So Shelley, the thing that I think, you know, a lot of people will say, this is the order you should do it in. You get to decide the order. But the thing is, if you put, for instance, dots on your microwave, you have to remember the order. The first one on the left is whatever they tell you it is. And so you have to remember the order. If you think you won't remember the order, one thing you might do is keep a list. If you still read print at all, or if you don't, maybe make a recording of the order. And remember that you're always speaking from left to right so that you can know what it means.
That's very correct. That's very true. Because in the beginning, my memory has served me well over the years, but I had a lot of practice when I was younger that I think I was a musician as well, like Jamie is. And so it doesn't have to be music. It could be a lot of different things, but the more we exercise our memory is very helpful. When I didn't know Braille very well, I was good at memorizing numbers. But then when I learned Braille, I wanted to write it down because I still memorized it, but then you've got something to fall back on. And that is very true. And there are very small recorded digital recorders you can get from the Independent Market for a pretty nominal fee. I'm thinking you're going to spend no more than maybe around $20 for one of these digital recorders. It's called a Wilson recorder, and they are very handy. And you can keep the material you put on it, you can erase over it, whatever. But things like that are a very good backup for what you're doing. let's see here. Checking my list about markings. I think I covered that. I was going to say, too, be willing to use your hands in the kitchen. Our sense of touch tells us a lot. And our hands are our eyes. Whatever we feel is what we see. And I use those words because it's what's comfortable to the, in general, to society. You see things, but you see them with your hands. You see them by feeling. And so one thing you can feel whether surfaces are clean. I think sometimes blind people clean better than sighted people in some respects, because you're feeling, and I, if something's gooey on the counter, I can't stand it. So I'm right there cleaning it. But we wash our hands coming into the kitchen, especially these days of COVID and all this kind of thing. So I've got paper towels sitting right by the sink and soap. So I start out by washing my hands. And you just want to be, check out your appliances. Know how they work. Know where the buttons are. Figure out, sometimes we have to know a little bit about maintenance, not maintenance in a real electrical type way, but just sometimes things get jammed or whatever. I bought a new coffee maker, for instance, this about a month ago. And it's one of those Keurig kind of coffee makers, but I got it from Walmart. So it's a Walmart version of one. So it's got the coffee pot on the left and the single cup one on the right in the same thing. Well, so it's got the basket. You can make a pot of coffee. So I was going to put the basket back in after I filled it up with coffee. And I couldn't figure out how to do it. So I called a blind friend of mine that just did kind of clued me in about these coffee makers. That's why we got it. And there was a little track that this filter basket has to sit into in the top of the section of the coffee maker where you put the pot. So once I felt around, I felt the two little slits, this little track, which I didn't notice at first. And once I was able to line that up, my basket is fit in slick as a whistle. So we want to be familiar with our kitchen appliances, and using our hands is one way to do that. The other thing I use my hands for a lot is mixing stuff up. So later in the week, when we get together again, we're going to actually make hamburgers. So when I that or making bread, you want to be, some people have problems with textures of things. I guess I don't. And so I mix everything up, a lot of things in my hands. You can tell the consistency. You can tell how well mixed something is. And you can always wash your hands. So just don't be afraid to do that. So any questions at this point that anybody has about marking or organizing or some things along those lines?
It's Janie Degenshine.
Yes.
A tech tip for markings could be, if you have an iPhone, and we're going to be talking about that at 3 o'clock, you can say, "Hey Siri, take a note." And then it'll say, "What do you want the note to say?" And you can start it with microwave. And then you can say, button one is popcorn, button two is whatever. And then when you want to bring it back up, all you have to do is say, "Siri, tell me my notes." And it'll say, "What note do you want?" And it'll either tell you the notes, all of them, or you can say, "Read me my microwave note," and it'll tell you. So that's one way of doing it. Just wanted to share that little tech tip.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to start using that. I've not used the note section in my phone that much. That's very helpful.
Good.
So the next thing I was going to talk about is spreading things. Now, people a lot of times have trouble spreading things. They say they tear up the bread, or they can't get the whole piece of bread covered, or whatever they're doing. To me, if you're using butter and things like that, a knife, you just want a table knife. Somebody's got a little, not such a sharp point to it, but it's got the wider blade. And keeping things room temperature is a little bit helpful. Not that you might all the time. I grew up in Idaho. We always kept butter in the cupboard. But in the South, you don't necessarily want to do that so much. So Depends on what part of the country you're in, but you might pull it out maybe a few minutes before you're going to use it and let it just get a little bit room temperature. Same with peanut butter. That's a real gooey, sticky mess. But so if you take your, and maybe keeping your bread a little cooler in the refrigerator. Some people do that. Some people keep it in a bread box. Either way, I use gluten-free bread. My bread is always frozen and I'll pop it in the toaster. So then it's got a little bit of a crust, and I like the taste of toasted bread anyway. But you put your bread on a surface. I've got glass trivets in my house. You could put it on a cutting board, on a plate, paper plate, any kind of thing. But have your bread there. And when you get your whatever you're spreading on your knife, start at the, I kind of frame the piece of bread with my left hand. I'm right-handed. So I fingers kind of on the top edge of the crust and the bottom edge of the crust, just along the side of it, so I can kind of keep it from sliding. And then I'll use my knife and try and go start at the top crust, and you come down, spread down with your, and you basically go top to bottom, left to right. So I start on the left edge, go top to bottom, and kind of move across, because it's easy to get the middle, but sometimes you don't spread it clear out to the edge. So you might kind of backstroke with your knife to get it up to the top of the crust of bread. If it's your left and right side of your breads are really just, there's nothing on them, then you could kind of start more of a left to right motion with your knife and your butter or peanut butter, whatever. Some things like peanut butter, jelly, jams, softer stuff like that, you might want to dip out with a spoon and use your, put it on your bread that way, and then spread it. So there's also little spreading knives that have a little bit of a wider blade that aren't sharp at all, but they're just a spreading knife. So that's a good way to work some of that kind of thing. Just going over a couple things. All righty. Let's see. Okay, we got that kind of stuff. I talk faster than I write, so I got more things written down. Alrighty, I spent more time talking about that. So one of the next things I was going to cover is pouring. Pouring can be kind of an issue. One thing I think is good in a kitchen as far as canisters work really well. It doesn't matter what kind, typically. I used round canisters. I like round ones. You can get square ones. You can use stainless steel, which are what mine are, with a good solid lid that fits over the whole top of it and really makes it airtight. For years, I used a lot of Tupperware, various Tupperware containers that keep things very airtight. That's pretty much the key. In the South, again, some people put flour even in the freezer. I keep my gluten-free flours in the freezer because they stay better. The duration or the longevity of the flour lasts better. And if it's in an airtight thing, you're not going to get, and I think our homes are a little different too than used to be, but they used to say you could get critters in your flour and things like that. But I think if it's airtight, your house is clean, I think, you know, those kind of things don't happen as much. So if I were pouring a dry ingredient, say flour, first of all, I wouldn't necessarily pour it. I would have it in a canister. I would use maybe a scoop of some kind, a smaller scoop. And I've got a measuring cup in my left hand, and I'm scooping flour into that measuring cup. And I kind of almost like, not hard, but just lightly kind of chop that flour up and down. And what that causes is for the flour to settle. And so then when you fill up the cup completely, you've got a full cup of flour. If you just dip a measuring cup in there and sweep and scoop, then it might be filled up over to the top, but it might not almost be a complete cup because it's not settled, shaken down and settled, whatever. So that's a good kind of a method to get used to with that. If I'm doing, there could be powders that are in smaller mouthed containers that you might want to put in a wider mouth container. And that way you could dip into it and put a measuring spoon or a measuring cup down into that container easier. Those kinds of things will really help you with more dry liquids or dry powders. We're going to make Jell-O today at the end of our lesson. So with Jell-O, you'd want to use scissors and open the Jell-O and then not start tipping it directly. That's the other thing. Don't start tipping things directly. Make sure you're over your bowl. Your measuring cup is over your bowl, and the Jell-O would be over the bowl you're going to put it in, and then start dumping. I've made mistakes where I've, one time I sifted flour. I was pretty green at being in the kitchen, but I didn't have anything under the sifter. Well, I sifted all right, but it all wound up on the counter. So then I had a mess to clean up. So you want to be sure that you're, you know, over the item that you're going to be using as your bowl. Let me see here. What is okay? And measuring spoons are the same thing. You can dip a measuring spoon down into a wider mouth container and come up. And then I just take my finger and level it off a little bit if you want to level. Sometimes it, you know, depending on what you're measuring, you could use a twinge extra like cinnamon. I like a lot of cinnamon. But some things you want just exactly the amount that is called for. And again, you can put a tray down, a trivet, cutting board. You can put a bowl down so that what you're measuring, you bring things close to the bowl, to the measuring spoon, measuring cup. So then when you're ready to put it in the bowl, you're right there and you don't have to go a distance to carry it across the room or whatever. I like having things close. You can actually measure in the sink or over the sink if you want to. If you've got a smaller container in one hand, but you're just getting a spoonful, do it over the sink. And that way, if it spills a little bit, then you just rinse it out of the sink. Same with wet items. You can measure those if you put them on a plate or a trivet or over the sink. A bowl down in the sink and pour. Same with pouring even coffee, a liquid coffee. You might want to have it on a tray so that if the lip of the coffee pot is kind of shallow and you're trying to find the edge of the coffee cup, again, you don't want to start tipping it until you know the spout is at the edge of the coffee cup and that it's going to go over into it. And then you'd start pouring kind of gently with either hot or cold things that you'd be pouring. You can feel the heat or the cold crawling up the outside of the cup. Now, there are little liquid indicators and things like that that you can hang over the side. It's a battery operated little gizmo that you can get from the independence market. I've never gotten in the habit of using it. I don't know. Never knew about it for years. And then when they came out, I just had already figured out pretty well how to do that. If I'm here, and again, you're washing your hands constantly, you're rinsing them off, I might just lean my finger over. You don't even have to touch the liquid that you're pouring. You can just feel the heat or the cold sometimes coming up to the top of the cup or the measuring cup and then pour. So lining up whatever you're pouring, I've got pitchers that have really long spouts. There again, figure out the long spout and the cup that you're pouring it into. Some cups are narrower. Sometimes you're using a solo cup, which is a wider cup. Kind of line the two up before you start tipping the pitcher. The other thing is make sure your lid's on tight, whatever the pitcher is you're using. Anyway, so that's I'm getting a time tech here so that I'm not carrying on. You can listen for things. You can hear the liquid sometimes pouring into it. Now, you have to kind of gain a technique for that. But you can, I do listen a lot for whether things, there's different sounds, whether it's emptier or fuller. And especially liquids, that's mostly what I'm referring to. So use your hearing. That's a great asset as well. If you're using something hot, like you filled up a kettle on the stove and you like to make tea and you get your kettle boiling and all that kind of thing, let the steam valve go before you start pouring it. That way it doesn't blast, because we tend to lean in when we're pouring stuff. But if you kind of stand a little more erect and let that steam escape a little bit, then when you pour it, yes, it's going to be very hot, but that steam isn't blasting you in the face. Same with the oven. Another thing I would practice is putting things in and out of your oven cold. That way you're getting used to the heaviness of what you're doing. Put just water in a bowl and practice putting it in and out of the stove. Use it with your hands. I put things in the stove with bare hands, but I take things out of the stove with mitts. And my mitts go up a little bit above my wrist so that you're going to protect yourself a little more. If you're getting something out of the microwave, and it's hot, just stand there a minute, open it up and let some of that blast of steam come out of there a little bit, and then move what you're using in the microwave. So those are just some kind of basic things I can think of. I want to have time to do the Jell-O, and I've got my stuff set out here. Before I start in on that, are there any questions about the pouring wet and dry, or spreading, or any of those kind of things I've mentioned?
Shelley, this is Diane. That's great. You know, I love hearing all these folks on the specific that they're going to talk about, because you can tell every person who talks really knows what they're talking. You can tell that they didn't read it in a book or an article, or somebody said, well, you could do this. You can tell that Shelley, she knows what she's doing. And she's had a lot of practice, so you can listen. Well, the only thing that I would add on the cups, whether you were measuring dry or liquid, I always buy the graduated measuring cups. I don't have, some of the, you could get a 2-cup measuring cup, and it has lines on the outside. Well, that doesn't help me. So I prefer to get just the graduated cups, and the same way with the graduated measuring spoons. Then you know that you're getting the right amount. That was all I wanted to add.
I appreciate that, Diane. And I did have that written down, but there again, I try and memorize more than I read, and I hadn't seen that. So yes, Tupperware has really good sets of them. And there's, like Diane said, you can go into a store and buy measuring cups that stack inside each other. The thing I like about the Tupperware, they have 2/3 and 3/4 cups. And my measuring cups have little pour spouts on the side of them. And sometimes that's kind of handy. And measuring spoons, go ahead.
Can I ask, before we get off of this Tupperware, I don't know where to buy Tupperware anymore. I used to give so many Tupperware parties, I never had to buy it because I get a lot of points. But I don't know where you get Tupperware today. It's a great invention, but where do you get it, Shelley?
There still are Tupperware dealers, and I think it's online. You could go online
and
look up Tupperware in your area and find a representative.
That's a great thought. I didn't think of that.
I do know that it still exists.
Yeah, I know it does, but I just didn't know how to, find it.
Some of those things have gone to you a little bit selling in I think the Tupperware brand is sometimes sold in Target or Walmart or stuff like that.
Really? Well, I've looked and I haven't found it, but I'll do what you suggested.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Rubbermaid is what is sort of its replacement in Target.
Okay.
Roughly the other thing, we have someone else who wants to speak, but the other thing that I would add is that Amazon sells spoons where the handle is bent. You can hold it straight and then dip your spoon in and hold it level and then transfer it.
That's good to know.
Okay, I think we have someone else who's wanting to say something. Is that right?
Judy, from Maryland. I have a comment and a question. First of all, the little attachments that you can put on the side of your cup that indicate when your cup is full, it's very loud. If you use that in public, everybody may run for the hills because they think it's a fire alarm. The one I have is very, very loud.
Judy, the thing that I do is keep my finger at the top.
Yes.
My finger's quiet.
Yes, it does. Yes. I'm sure anything is quieter than that. But any suggestions about, I buy a lot of extract because I end up spilling it. My measuring spoons, I can't tell if I'm holding it straight. What I do is I hold it over a container that it may spill into, so then I can funnel it back into the bottle. But the problem is the funnel that I use is too big. You know, it's a small funnel, but I need some help with measuring extracts, vanilla extracts, lemon extract. I'm really keeping McCormick in business, wasting all that stuff.
Hey, do you want to take that one?
Diane. I'm sorry. Is Diane. I tell you what I do about extracts, lemon and vanilla and maple, whatever, liquid extract. I take the lid off and then get it over my bowl or cup, and I just very slowly pour it over my finger. You know, when blind people cook, you wash your hands constantly.
Yes,
you just have to use your hands. And so then that way, I can hear it, and also I can smell it. And so a lot of the things, you know, so what if it calls for a half a teaspoon of vanilla? So, all right, you just pour a little bit. I don't worry about it. I still worry about measuring extract.
Shelley, did you want to add anything?
The only other thing, the technique I've used too, it also is, if you're good at balancing the spoon on the side of the bowl while you're...
Yes.
But the other thing is use the cap of the vanilla bottle. Just pour a little into that cap. And like Diane said, if you're holding it over the bowl, if you get a little, oh, so what? You know, I mean, it's not that big, but a cap will work as well.
Now,
So I'm just torturing myself with measuring spoons?
I would say don't get that frustrated. Don't work that hard.
The other thing that I know a lot of people do is transfer their liquid out of its bottle into baby food jars.
Yeah.
You can dip a spoon. You can use your measuring spoon that way.
Right. A lot of people use like mayonnaise jars, pickle jars, whatever kind of jar would fit whatever your contents are. Oil is another thing. Putting oil in a bigger container so you can dip stuff down into it instead of having to pour.
Makes sense. And one more question. The stackable, measuring cups that fit inside each other. Does the NFB, and I guess I can call them the Independence Market, do they carry that? I have some. I got them.
Honey, you can buy those.
They're not accurate.
You can buy those anywhere. I've been using them for years.
Yeah.
I think some of it is just getting used to them. But if you're worried about accuracy, and I think Shelley already said this, if you're measuring flour, for example, set that cup of flour down in something else so you don't have a There's nothing like cleaning up flour off of a counter. And so set that down and then just run a knife across the top to level it off. But I don't worry much about these extracts. Okay. And the cap is excellent. Again, I put it over something because chances are I'm going to run the cap over.
And to answer your question, I think you can get them from the independent market.
But I'm sure you can.
Like Diane said, there's plenty of kitchen stores that already have, they also have cups that might have a little raised dot on the end of, I've seen those that are just cut, you know, made commercially that are, have some designation to them. Same with teaspoons. I've seen teaspoons bought just regular that have like raised print on them. I've seen them with dots. You just might have to look a little bit, but yes, you can find them other places besides the aids and appliances.
Yeah, I got a set of those measuring cups from Williams Sonoma. And my daughter kept telling me these are not accurate. And I'm like, why wouldn't they be? And my daughter is fully sighted. So she put a cup of flour in the Williams Sonoma one cup and poured it into the traditional Pyrex glass measuring cup, which is useless for me now. And she was right. It wasn't accurate. It came in less than a cup.
The question is
not accurate.
Okay, but the question is, how accurate do you need to be for what you're making?
There you go, Judy.
Okay.
All right, we need to make sure that Shelley has time to make her Jello. So, Cindy, why don't you be the last question?
Okay, well, it wasn't exactly a question, but I don't think the cups are inaccurate. So the stackable ones tend to, just a second. The stackable ones are kind of like dry measures, and the Pyrex one is a wet measure, and they don't measure the same. So I've measured a cup of liquid in those things before when I was trying to get enough, the amount that would equal, say, a quart of milk. And when I got done, there was still quite a bit left. And so a Pyrex cup would measure a liquid thing more accurately because it's more of a wet measure. And I've had people disagree with me on that, and that's fine, but that's been my experience.
I think I've heard the same thing. So what I've done while we were talking, because I didn't want to run out of time, is I was going to use, let me see, my barcode reader here. I've done a couple things ahead of time, but I want to demonstrate.
We need everybody to mute until she finishes making her Jello. If more questions. Mute your phones, that would be helpful.
So I'm using an ID mate to identify my Jello.
Oh, tell us what an ID mate is.
It's a barcode reader that somehow I messed this up. It's an ID, it's a barcode reader that you get through Envision America, and it it's supposed to tell you what the item is. Somehow it's the Summit. It's the Summit. And I move things, so it's not working quite right.
Those of you who have iPhones, though, can probably download an app that will read what your packages are. That's Janie's department.
Yes, so did you hear that? Yes, the app is called Seeing AI. Seeing AI.
What's the, Shelley, what did that say? I missed it.
Public speeches, yellow things, slices, and heavy syrup.
Publix, yellow clean peaches in heavy syrup.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it tells you the brand and it tells you what the item is.
Yeah. Is that going in our Jello?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It is. So I've got the water in the microwave and I'm going to move the phone. Hopefully, everybody knows what a microwave sounds like. So I'll just turn that on. And again, I'm using my numbers on the side, 200, and start. And we'll let the water go. In the bowl, I put the Jell-O powder already. And I went ahead and opened up the can of peaches and I'm draining them. So I put a colander in the sink. I've got a silicone colander that's in the sink. And that's what my peaches are sitting in right now until I'm ready, because I didn't want to add the liquid. And when I was measuring my water, I did use the dry measure, the regular measuring cup for one cup, but I threw in just an extra amount of water, about just a couple tablespoons, maybe it would add up to. I've heard that if you are microwaving like this, you know, it gets steamy. And so some of that water might boil out of it, so to speak. So if you put just a hair more water, it's okay to do that. So that the, I probably got this way too hot. I don't know. So got my spoon. I put all my ingredients and everything out on the counter. That's what I like to do, is gather everything I'm going to be using ahead of time. It makes the process go a little smoother. And you're not running all over the kitchen, like I say, trying to find things. Sorry, I should have. I should be done in a second here. I put it on for 2 minutes because I wanted it to be pretty hot.
And you then, can probably open it if you think it's going to be hot enough. I expect it will.
And again, I poured the water into a glass Pyrex measuring cup, just because it's bigger, it's a thicker glass. It seems to work pretty good. And I hope I got enough water is what I hope. I guess it is. So the other thing while you're stirring is to keep stirring it while it's hot. And every now and then just kind of put the spoon on its edge so that you can hear kind of the crystals of the Jell-O melting. Because you don't want to pile a Jell-O at the bottom, powdered Jell-O that didn't get dissolved. So I'm doing that. And then I'm going to get my, oh, nice. No, it didn't quite. Okay, I just almost had the experience where the handle of the spoon fell into the Jell-O. So it didn't, but you might want to put this spoon in. I've got a long-handled like teaspoon that I'm stirring with. And you could turn the bowl, the spoon over so that the handle lays against the edge and the bowl of the spoon is upside down. That way it is less likely to fall into the bowl and get so hot that you can't find it, which I've done before. And that way you have to get a knife and something and dig it out with it. So I'm getting my water. I'm gonna put a cup of water with this. I'm putting that into my bowl, measuring cup. Then I'm carrying my measuring cup over here. I'm pouring that in. And again, the glass measuring cup has kind of a short spout, but it's not like, let's see, how to describe this. So it's not the bottom, about halfway in the middle of the measuring cup, I kind of lean it against the bowl, and that way the water I'm pouring is going to go out into the middle of the bowl. So I come in, the measuring cup came in contact with the side of the bowl, and that way I knew I could pour it in and it wouldn't spill. So I'm stirring it up, and then I've drained the peaches and things. So I'm just gonna pick up the colander that I've had it in and carry it over here. That might not be the most graceful way to do it, but that tends to be, and I've had washed my hands previously. So I'm just kind of scooping the peaches into the bowl with my hand and got those in there, and then I'll stir it and it'll be ready for the refrigerator. So and it's not that it's real tricky to make Jell-O, but it's the idea that sometimes it's just the doing of it, you know, the doing of it, and the Jell-O will set up and the peaches will be in there and we'll be good to go. So that's our project that I was going to do, which was demonstrating the pouring and the measuring and some of those kinds of things. And Friday, what we're going to do when we get together again is we're going to make hamburger steak, and I'm going to cut up some potatoes and make roasted potatoes and season them and put them in the oven. So
yeah,
if anybody wants to,
we all get to come over. Yeah, we all get to come over, right? Let's see if anybody has any last questions.
Sure.
Before we have our fun break.
Thank you so much. It's been delightful to be with everybody. I hope you just enjoy your week and get a lot out of it. There's a lot to be learned. Thank you.
This is Ruth. Yes, this is Ruth. I do have a comment.
Oh, Ruth. Hi.
I am here. Good. I just want to remind people that when you lose vision, a lot of times you don't maintain proper posture. You kind of lean forward and your shoulders are hunched, and sometimes you keep your elbows kind of at your side. And if you don't have the proper posture, that's more important sometimes than trying to see something that you're doing. If you're trying to bend over, a lot of times the shadow of your head gets between you and the light that you have, and you really can't see it anyway. So it's more important especially when you're pouring or measuring, to stand up straight, have enough room for your arms and hands to do the things that you want to do, whether you can see things or not. You will find actually that you will be more accurate that way. When you're trying to twist and bend your body to see something, and also if you have a knife in your hand, not a good idea, but for measuring and other things, I just see a lot of people going through contortions and getting frustrated because they're not in the proper standing position. And when they think about it, it makes sense because your hands are what you use in the kitchen, whether you can see or not, but they have to be in the proper place to do the task that you want them to do. That's my comment.
Thank you, Ruth. And we are so here.
We're so glad to have you.
Hey, Ruth. Yes. We're happy to have you.
Yes, very much. Thanks. And that is so true. It's just that's where our sense of feel and things just come in so handy. And if it takes a little more time in the beginning, it'll just get better. Thank you.
Hi, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
This is Patricia Smith Jenkins from South Carolina. I was wondering, Shelly had mentioned earlier about labeling her microwave or other appliances with the Braille dots. Where do you get the tools, or do you just buy the stickers for those numbers? I mean, how do you obtain those?
The dots you get, the dots I use, I pretty much use from the independent market. They have, like I said, all kinds of, they have them kind of on sheets. And you usually get about, 20 on, some of them are 20 on a sheet if they're small enough.
But wait, are you talking about if you are going to write Braille on them? Is that?
Yes.
Patricia?
I'm sorry. I said dots, but I meant the Braille.
If you Braille a label, how do you attach it?
Okay.
Wait a minute. I was asking, where do you get the Braille labels? Not how do you attach it?
I think she writes them.
I make my own. You can get labeling tape, like I said, the Dymo tape, or there is our magnetic ones. And I just use the slate and stylus, and I'll make my own labels. The magnetic ones are kind of cool. It's like on a roll, just like tape would be. And you can even use them as kind of a grocery list. I stick them on after you open the can. I'll put them on the side of the refrigerator. Then that's kind of serves like a grocery list. Mm-hmm. And
I've even taken them to the grocery store and put them on the cans right in the store if you have a reader with you or something. But
well, you have a grocery clerk.
So you make your own. There are ones you can purchase, and you can get those through the independence market or probably Maxi Aids or one of those aid and appliance places. They have pre-made ones.
Okay, and what was the tool name that you named to make your own?
Magnetic labeling tape and Dymo. D-Y-M-O. Dymo labeling tape. The stuff you get from the National Center is going to be clear.
From the Independence Market, I think.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Independence Market is going to be clear. The Dymo tape you buy in a Staples or Max, Office Max or something, is going to have color to it. But the ones we use are clear. And that way, if you whatever appliance you put it on, somebody else can still read the print.
Uh-huh. I was wondering about the tool that makes the braille bumps.
Could I interrupt for just a minute? Mm-hmm. My name's Connie from Pennsylvania, and I kind of get the idea she's getting it. There are braille or the Dyma tape braille label makers too.
Yes. I mean,
yeah. And all you have to do then is find the letter or whichever symbol you want. And, you know, you'll just press on that when it's when it's where it should be. And
Do we know if that's made anymore?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you still get them?
Yes.
What is it called and where do you get them?
It's, I've bought them a couple different places. I actually have two of them and I use mine a lot. I use it to making labels for spices and all kinds of things.
Do you know what it's called or where you bought it?
I think you can get it on the Independent Living AIDS Market.
Living AIDS. Okay, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's there. And it's probably another place too. I'd have to look. I've had mine for a few years now. I also wanted to mention that I believe it's Future AIDS also has those, the graduated measuring cups with braille on the handles of the measuring cups, which is kind of neat too. Yeah. And they also have metal measuring spoons. And they're also the graduated sizes. But what's really neat about them is that they're made to go into things easier. So you can actually put your spoon, like if you want a half teaspoon of cinnamon, you can actually slide it right in the container to get it.
Right. We mentioned those earlier. They're available from Amazon.
Okay. Now, Amazon also. I didn't get mine from there, but yeah.
No, I know. All right, we're going to have to end this, I think, so we can stop the recording right now. And thank you, Shelley.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So do we have our Zoom people who can stop the recording?
I think that's Miss Ruth, because Abby left. So Miss Ruth, Alt-C will stop the recording if you're on your computer.
Or is